Aboard the Vigilance, Koutsoudis received a rather terse but reassuring communication about Brunn.
She's safe aboard the Harrier. If that's safe, they won't let me talk to her.
I don't think my aunt eats girls for breakfast. Not even that one. Who I'm sure is cheerful and bright-eyed and ready to tell an admiral everything she thinks she knows about everything she's heard.
Harris put in a call to Sweet Delight to reassure Cecilia that Brunn had survived. Cecilia, relieved of that anxiety, had a long string of other topics to discuss. Harris really didn't care at that moment about the fate of the breeding farms she'd visited, the status of the financial Ansible, or what might happen to the miners who had thrown the party. She would have been far more annoyed with Cecilia if the conversation had not included an inquiry about each of the former Sweet Delight crew. Cecilia might have her batty side, but she did care about people. She even cared about the present crew, especially Jig Farrow, whom she praised until Harris finally cut her off. She could almost feel his embarrassment through the intervening thousands of kilometers of vacuum.
You know, it's going to be very interesting when your aunt and Lady Cecilia get together.
Oh, my.
Those of the bridge crew who had been on Sweet Delight had the same expression she felt on her own face. Kevil Mahoney dropped the faceted paperweight and stared at Lord Thornbuckle.
Patchcock? What are they doing on Patchcock?
Bunny stared out the window at a day that suddenly seemed less sunny.
I haven't the faintest idea. It probably has something to do with the technical data on the rejuvenation drugs that they sent us. But it'll take me hours to wade through that. And in the meantime, Patchcock, of all places in the universe.
It's not a good sign. Things have gone wrong with this from the beginning. Do you suppose Kemptry had this sort of feeling? That everything was suddenly coated with grease and slipping away in all directions?
I don't know, but I do. First, the financial ansibles in the distant sectors go offline for a few days, and then some crazy admiral demands authorization to take a whole wave on a live-fire maneuver out to the frontier, just in case there's trouble.
And you gave it.
Well, they were already gone by the time it actually crossed my desk. And they claimed it involved Harris Serrano, that she was in some kind of trouble.
Oh, it's probably George's fault.
Bunny looked confused.
Not that. The Patchcock thing. Whatever you don't want George to see, he sees. Whatever you hope he doesn't know, he knows. Some evil instinct told him that there was one place we didn't want our children to go, and he headed for it like a bee to its hive.
From the Guerny Republic?
I know, it's unlikely. But so is George. I wish he'd realize what his talents are and use them profitably.
Bunny glared at the desk. He'd told Poisson that he didn't want to be interrupted.
Yes?
A Marta Caterina Saenz, my lord. She says she's going to talk to you.
But the door was opening already. Rafa's Aunt Marta had the dark, leathery face of someone who spent most of her days outside. On her, the coloring and features that made Rafa look like a gypsy princess had matured into those of a wise woman. She wore clothes that layered improbable color combinations to give an overall effect of archaic flamboyance. Bunny had never met her before, since she preferred to live in the mountains of her own planet, but he had no doubt who she was.
Where is my niece?
You are naturally concerned.
Marta gave him a look that stopped the words in his mouth. Bunny felt his own mouth going dry.
Don't try your honey tongue on me, Kevil Mahoney. You've the charm of a horse dealer, but I'm not buying. You sent Raffaella off somewhere, and now you've lost her. Isn't that so?
Bunny wondered why his collar suddenly felt so tight. He had aunts of his own, formidable aunts, whom he had learned to work with or around as needs must.
She's not exactly lost. They're on Patchcock.
They? I presume Ronald Carruthers is one of them?
And my son George is the other. She should be safe enough.
Marta's dark eyebrows rose alarmingly to the iron-gray hair above.
Did you not hear me before? Your son George, indeed. I've heard about your George.
Before Kevil could answer, she waved a hand.
I'm sorry, that was uncalled for. Your son's not a bad young man, and what I heard is years old by now. Just that he had a clever tongue in his head, inherited no doubt from you.
Quite.
Bunny glanced at Kevil, glad to see the flush receding from his neck. His profession required him to keep his temper, but no man was at his calmest with his son under fire.
So, You sent Raffaella off somewhere with Ronald and George?
When cornered by an aunt of this caliber, the best plan, in Bunny's experience, was complete disclosure.
Not precisely. We sent Ronnie and George to... on a... to do something for us, and they didn't report in.
I'm not surprised. And you sent Raffaella to rescue them? I suppose it made sense from your viewpoint.
Not exactly rescue. We wouldn't, I mean... We assumed they'd just gotten... sidetracked, as it were.
And because Raffaella loved Ronald, she would seek him out as the stag seeks the doe, though it's backwards in this case, and put them back on track?
Something like that.
So now she's on Patchcock, with Ronald and George, and what's wrong now?
They didn't know that Otella Moraline disappeared there months ago, after disguising herself as a worker and infiltrating a workers' organization. We are fairly sure she was found out and killed. We hadn't told them because we didn't have any idea they would suddenly hair off to Patchcock from the Guerny Republic. That's hardly on the direct route.
Raffaella always had a nose like a bloodhound. Give her a sniff of intrigue, and she would follow it through any amount of boring cover-up.
Really? I hadn't known that.
She's not your niece, and I'm not sure she knows it herself. But it's one reason I asked her to start going through my files to test my hypothesis. And sure enough, she discovered one little fiddle after another, spooked the accountants concerned, and delighted me. So if she headed for Patchcock from the Guerny Republic, then whatever you sent them there for is connected to Patchcock.
But it couldn't be, unless...
You might as well explain, because I'm not leaving until you do.
Marta looked about as movable as a block of granite, and while technically they could call security to haul her away, neither of them was willing to get in that much trouble.
Let's see. We have now involved 5 or 6 major families.
At least. Don't stop now.
All right. It's the rejuvenation drugs. And others. Lorenza had been dealing illegal neuroactive drugs through the upper crust, and we suspect she might have been involved in tampering with rejuvenation drugs. When we looked into it, our supplies are supposed to be manufactured in the Guerny Republic, but they're shipped on a route that could allow the Compassionate Hand, whom we know Lorenza was working for, to get access to some or all of them.
Not healthy. I'm glad I manufacture my own.
You what?
Well, not personally. But if you think I'm going to put things into my body that have been manufactured by people who might be my enemies, think again. You know I have pharmaceuticals.
Yes, but you can't... But no one in the Familiars is licensed to...
By the Familiars? Don't be stuffy, Bunny. We're over near the border. I have a valid license from Guerny, and we manufacture a small supply. Enough for me and my people and a small export.
You smuggle.
Me? Smuggle? Surely you jest. I do international trade with the Guernesi, who the last time I heard weren't enemies.
Kevil opened his mouth and shut it again. Bunny would have been amused if he hadn't been worried. He had never seen Kevil at a loss for words. Perhaps he didn't have an aunt of his own and wasn't familiar with their unique abilities.
I wish we'd known that. We needed reference samples. That's why we sent Ronnie and George. We could have simply asked you.
Assuming that my starting materials haven't been adulterated. If I remember correctly, the starting materials come from several sources. Come to think of it, quite a bit used to come from Patchcock before that unfortunate incident.
The Patchcock incursion?
Yes. Once the Moralines took over, exports dropped. I assume the damage to the infrastructure limited production. And perhaps they found other markets. I don't think I've seen quotes on their production when we've been in the market for materials.
That's odd.
Bunny and Kevil looked at each other.
You're right. It's been years. They should have everything back up to speed. The Moralines have been gaining in the index.
Marta blinked, and a slow grin spread across her face.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's what Rafa found out, where the materials are going.
If they were going to the Guerny Republic, why would she care? And besides, raw materials are raw materials. They may have found something else to make with the same starting material. Something more profitable.
Than rejuvenating drugs? You jest. I hate to tell you this if you don't already know, but the profit margin is... example. Quality control is a bitch. You have to have really good chemists keeping an eye on it because the lazy ones keep thinking they found a shortcut. The Guernesi warned me about that.
So, you can't think of anything more profitable to do with the substrate?
Not unless they've discovered an alchemical stone that lets them transmute it to whatever's highest at market. No, if it's being produced in the quantities it was, the only thing more profitable than selling to me and to the Guernesi would be a vertical integration. Produce it themselves.
And Rafa could have figured that out.
If not in detail, enough to follow the lead. Especially if the samples you provided gave the Guernesi any clue. Isotopic analysis or something like that.
Are you a chemist?
One did not usually inquire into the formal training of family chairholders, who were presumed to be broadly educated. But Marta seemed more comfortable with this than he had ever been with the food chemistry that underlay part of his family's fortune.
As a matter of fact, yes. It was a way of avoiding something my parents wanted me to do, so I completed a doctorate. Then I did postdoc work at Sherwood Labs. Not that it would interest you, the details. In the long run, it was more fun to be a rich dabbler with time for other interests than a full-bore researcher. Though I may spend a rejuve or so going back to it someday.
It's all very interesting, but we've got three young people headed into far more trouble than they anticipate, and I don't see any way to warn them or help them.
I shall go, of course. It is, after all, my niece. And I understand the chemical side, but I shall need assistance.
Yes, but of course.
Bunny looked at Kevil, who looked back. Neither of them could leave.
You won't want to involve Fleet directly, not after what happened last time. But don't you have a tame Fleet veteran? That woman Cecilia de Marktos hired? Rafa told me about her, how she helped with that mess on your planet.
Bunny almost choked at the thought of anyone considering Harris Serrano tame. Still, it was a better idea than the nothing he'd had. If only Brun weren't with her. He really didn't want Brun on Patchcock, along with her old cronies. Rejuvenation would fix the gray hairs, but not the fatal heart attack he felt coming on.
I suppose, yes. Possible. She's a long way off, but we can signal.
If something else hadn't happened to the Ansibles, which had only been back up for a day. Messages were backed up, and only emergency traffic could get through with its usual speed.
I will make my own way to Patchcock. Rather than wait, it may take me longer anyway. You will contact this person?
Bunny didn't let himself think of the difficulties.
Yes, I will. And I'm glad you came.
Secrecy is usually a bad idea.
Then Marta swept out with a flourish of her cape.
That is a very dangerous woman. But did you ever see such bones?
Not my type.
Bunny opened his mouth to say more, but Poisson came in with an expression that meant trouble.
It's Fleet.
Bunny froze inside, thinking mutiny.
They've successfully fought a benignity incursion.
Where?
Xavier, it's a fairly isolated system out...
I know where it is. What happened?
All enemy ships destroyed and a substantial reinforcement of regular space service in place. Apparently there is a personal message to you from the Admiral.
Bunny took the cube with its encrypted recording, fitted it into the desk, and inserted the earplug.
Lord Thornbuckle, this is Admiral Vida Serrano. I'm glad to be able to tell you that your daughter Brun is alive and well. So is Lady Cecilia de Marktos, whom I understand is a friend of yours. We need to confer at your earliest convenience. The Rockhouse Major Base Commandant can arrange a secure Ansible link. Thank you.
Bunny pulled the plug from his ear and stared at Poisson.
Had you heard this?
No, my lord. It's encrypted.
It's... I need to speak to the Rockhouse Major Base Commander. Please set up a tight link for me.
At once.
Poisson went out. Kevil raised his brows.
Well? Apparently Brun was in the middle of a battle for Xavier, which means that Cecilia and Harris Serrano were too. And the Admiral wants to speak to me. Says we must talk. Brun's on her ship, I gather. I don't like that at all.
You have to do something. You have to. Surely you care.
Of course I care, but surely you see my problem. I can't just leave...
Why not? You're not in the military anymore. You're a civilian. You assured me all that talk about a secret mission was just something you made up in an emergency. You can just walk away. Take my your yacht and go find out what's wrong.
Lady Cecilia, it's not that simple. I am not free to go.
You mean you don't want to? It's more fun to play soldier.
I was not playing, Lady Cecilia. People died in battle and as a direct result of my actions. Whatever you think about the military, you personally and everyone you know on Xavier would be dead without us. If you want to talk playing, how about a grown woman so fixated on horses that she can't tell a game from war?
The moment the words were out, Harris would have snatched them back, but entropy prevailed. Cecilia glared, speechless. But only, Harris was sure, for a moment.
If I could interrupt.
Harris glanced up and saw her aunt, Admiral Serrano, in the doorway. She started to stand, but the Admiral waved her down.
At ease, Captain. I have things to say to both of you.
Cecilia had whirled, still angry and ready to attack. But Vida Serrano seemed not to notice as she came in and took the other chair across Harris's desk.
Lady Cecilia, I'm glad to finally meet the person my niece so respected.
Not much respect, if you ask me.
As a matter of fact, I'm not asking. I'm commenting on an observation anyone might make. Now, I understand you've had an upsetting communication from a relative on Patchcock. I was unaware that your family had interests there.
We don't. I have no idea what Ronnie is doing there or why Rafa is with him. They had both agreed to her parents' request that they avoid each other for a while, but I don't see what business it is of yours.
Admiral Serrano ran one hand over her short silver hair.
As the commander of this battle group, I have a natural interest in anyone trying to suborn one of my commanders.
Commanders?
The two of you are a well-matched pair. Lady Cecilia, by whatever means she obtained it, Captain Serrano now commands an RSS cruiser. She commanded it in battle against an enemy of the Familius trying to invade. Now that I'm here, and since I outrank her, I am in command, and she is one of my subordinates.
I see that, but she's not really military anymore. She's a civilian. She assured me.
Admiral Serrano tilted her head slightly. Harris felt a pang of sympathy for Cecilia. Everyone in the fleet knew what that head tilt meant, the final pause before the prey was impaled.
Lady Cecilia, you tell me. If you put a cow's horns on a horse and hung a placard with cow on it, would that make the horse into a cow?
Of course not.
Very good. Captain Serrano was bred and trained as a military commander. She functioned as a military commander for 20-odd years. Do you really think a couple of years running your yacht could change what she is?
But I like her, and I don't...
Like the military. Sorry about that. It's always happening, you know. People who think they know what we're like, and then actually meet one of us and discover we're human.
You're patronizing me. I'm not as young as I look.
I know that. Regulations forbid us to wear them, but I was one of the first multiple rejuvenants in the Familius. I would have 3 rings, a volunteer to study the effects, in fact. I would bet our birthdays aren't that far apart.
You look older.
Admirals must have a certain maturity of presence. I chose to combine other therapies with my rejuvenations so that I look old enough to scare young cadets and can still outrun most field-grade officers. You should know that I, too, have had communications about Patchcock. Lord Thornbuckle is concerned about the situation there. He wanted Captain Serrano to take the yacht and find out what's happening to the young people.
That's what I said. She should go and...
Lady Cecilia, I can't leave without...
The Admiral raised her hand, a teacher to unruly children.
You want her to go to Patchcock, and she won't. She correctly considers herself under orders. There's a solution, you know.
Harris realized what her aunt meant a long moment before Cecilia did. Cecilia looked up, startled.
You mean you?
I can order her... And you had better go if I do, Harris.
If? Why if? Why not just do it?
Captain, what would your orders be if you were the Admiral?
I wouldn't send RSS warships to Patchcock. It's likely to make things worse.
So?
So, If I could insert a small, non-threatening civilian ship with some specialists to find out what's happened, rescue personnel if necessary.
Good choices. I was going to relieve you as captain of the Vigilance anyway. You don't need to waste your time shepherding her to a repair dock. Despite is too big for this job and too small for anything else. You're not officially on the list, even if you are tucked away in a corner of the database. I don't have to notify anyone at personnel about your transfer. Whom do you want on that yacht?
You want me to go on Sweet Delight?
It's the right ship. Small, fast, civilian, and full of specialists. Or it will be when you select the right crew for this. Covert, remember.
Yes, sir.
Was this really an order? Would she really have the authority to pull out the crew she wanted?
Actually, this will simplify things for me. I have some loose ends to tidy before you come back in the regs, assuming that's what you want.
Admiral Serrano looked at Harris and nodded before Harris could get the words out.
Yes, I thought so. It's almost time. This little chore will fit in nicely.
I'm coming.
Of course. It's your ship and your nephew. Now, about that girl.
She stays.
That's what her father said. What's your reason?
She's stretched her luck well past its elastic limit, and she's too valuable as a hostage. She'll be happy enough here if you let her soak up practical matters from your specialists.
She already is. When her father wanted to speak to her, she was down in environmental learning to tear down a scrubber and fascinating the chief at the same time. This afternoon, she was deep in the hull specifications for minesweepers. I hope I'll still be in command of this wave when you've finished on Patchcock.
Harris suspected that the Admiral would enjoy Brunn as much as the young woman would enjoy a few weeks aboard the flagship.
Well then, if that's decided, I'll go back to Sweet Delight. I expect you two have a lot to talk about.
Cecilia nodded to Admiral Serrano. Harris called someone to escort her back to the other ship.
We do need to talk. But this isn't the best time. I'll see you after Patchcock.
There'll have to be a board.
The thought, the word, sent shivers down her spine.
Of course. It worries you? It shouldn't. There's ample evidence, just in what you've sent me so far, and in what Suisa sent from Despite, to support your actions. Not even counting the battle itself. You're in no danger, Harris, not this time. You've done well. You're coming home, Harris. Back where you belong. Back with those who love you.
Harris could not doubt her aunt, not faced with the warmth in those eyes. But others, she would have to know why they had ignored her before. She kept herself busy the rest of that day, visiting the sick bay, arranging the change of command, choosing the crew to go with her in the yacht. She was choosing the crew for Patchcock. The same familiar faces, Oblo, Mahari, Janice, Kutsudis, Petrus. Petrus. She looked at him with no less affection than before, yet it was different. How many days had it been? And she hadn't missed that part, not really. When all the transfers had been done, when she was back on the familiar, but tiny, bridge of Sweet Delight, with the familiar crew around her and Lady Cecilia simmering in her suite like a kettle on the hearth, she realized that the trip to Patchcock would not be peaceful for one person, at least.
I've missed you.
He slipped into bed beside her. He was warm and smooth, the shape her hands had wanted without knowing it. And yet, even before Xavier, neither of them had taken up the many opportunities. She thought she knew what it meant for her. What did it mean for him?
I'm just not comfortable aboard ship.
Harris rolled her head sideways, facing what must be faced. But Petrus merely looked thoughtful.
I'm not either, if you want the truth of it. I love you. I loved you for years, and getting to be with you was wonderful, but it doesn't feel right aboard ship. And it's not just the memory of those damned cockroaches. Really, I swear.
I know. But we do have a dilemma, especially if you feel the same way. I love you. I want to be around you. And I love being in space.
Me too.
But not in bed in space.
She frowned, hardly realizing it until his finger began smoothing her forehead.
We are grown-ups. We can take our pleasures serially instead of binging. It's fine with me if we put this part of our life aside, when we're aboard. For one thing, we won't be waiting for some crisis to interrupt.
Thank you.
I almost wish... Oh, sorry, nothing.
Wish what?
Harris pushed herself up on one elbow to look at him. The sight of his brows, pulled together in a knot of concentration, almost undid the previous agreement.
Well, nothing we can change. Not about you, is what I mean.
Petrus!
It's just... we don't have anything to do. And this little ship is a beauty, and it was fun fitting her out with some decent equipment and weaponry, but we don't get to do anything with it. Vigilance now. While I was scared out of my skull, I felt needed, competent.
Harris rolled all the way over and buried her chin in the mat of black hair on his chest.
I know. And that's why I'm going back in, Petrus. And I want you to come back, too.
I thought so. Then we can't...
Yes, we can. We're not going to waste what we do have. Either you'll end up with a commission from all this, or we'll simply use common sense. Confine it to times we aren't aboard.
Is that an order, ma'am?
Sir.
And she set about undoing the pact they had just made.
I don't like it, letting Rafa go off by herself like this. Ow!
Ronnie slapped at a tick fly and hit it, which left an itchy wet spot on his arm and a mess on his hand.
She'll be all right. She's inside, isn't she? Not out here being eaten up by these things.
George flapped the gray-green cloth hanging down from his hat and swung his arms in a sort of uncoordinated dance. He had draped himself in the recommended insect-proof veil for their trek along the shore, only to discover that tick flies could crawl up the arms. And once inside the veil, they couldn't get back out. Even satiated with blood, they still whined around inside the veil with annoying persistence. Ronnie looked seaward, where sullen waves rolled sluggishly landward and spitefully slapped the crumbling shore. Far out, a line of dirty white might mark the reefs he'd seen mentioned in the tourist brochure. Landward, the low, boxy shapes of Touville's monotonous architecture cast uninteresting shadows as square as the buildings. He hadn't seen the hotel, but in the transient workers' hostel, the cramped room smelled of disinfectant, and the ventilation fans squeaked monotonously.
It's not exactly exotic, not even the planet itself.
No.
George kicked at a mound of crumbly stuff and jumped back as a horde of many-legged, shiny-backed things ran out. He backed up a couple of steps.
Look at that. What do you suppose that...
Sting pails.
They both looked up to find a tall, lean individual with a slouch hat and long, white, perfectly pointed mustaches grinning at them in a way that emphasized their ignorance.
If I were you, I'd move farther away. Sting tails know the scent of their nest and the critter that kicked it.
George, who had been fascinated by the fast-moving swarm, backed up again and watched as the swarm continued to move toward him. George backed away faster.
Damn it! Now what?
Hop! Big hops! When you're 20 meters away, they'll lose track.
George hopped, looking ridiculous, with his veil bouncing up and down. Ronnie jogged along, keeping wide of the swarm just in case, and the stranger strolled at ease, hands in his pockets. When they halted again, George breathless and disheveled, Ronnie took a longer look at the stranger. Despite the old battered hat, with odd decorations stuck in its band, a tiny horseshoe, a fishhook with feathers, a long curling quill from some exotic bird, a blue rosette, the man was otherwise tidily, even foppishly dressed, in crisp khaki slacks and shirt, the pleats pressed to a knife edge. A tiny pink flower in his buttonhole, a perfectly folded white handkerchief peeking from one pleated pocket, stout low boots of fawn leather, and those mustaches, which matched bushy white eyebrows over bright blue eyes.
You boys must have let Marshall at the station tell you what to buy.
Ronnie would have been annoyed, but he was already hot, sweaty, and bug-bitten.
I can smell the fly begone from here. But of course it doesn't repel tick flies. Marshall got it by mistake 3 years ago, and none of us will buy it. He has to foist it off on the tourists.
Ronnie slapped at his neck and missed that tick fly.
Not that we get many tourists. Certainly not your sort.
And what is our sort?
Rich young idiots. More money than sense. I mean, we'd heard the royals were disbanding, letting loose a plague of your sort, but I thought Patchcock was too far away and too boring to attract any. And that veil will only trap the tick flies inside, besides making you hotter.
George tore off the veil.
I know that. I was just about to take it off when I...
When you kicked a stingtail nest, and now you're angry with me. I understand.
Ronnie had the odd feeling that he did. In fact, he liked the old fellow, and hoped George wouldn't say anything too rude. He put his hand out.
I'm Ronnie Carruthers, and this is George Mahoney.
The old man looked at his hand, and Ronnie realized it was smeared with blood and tick fly juice. He pulled it back to wipe on his slacks.
Sorry.
No offense. I'm Hubert DeVries Michelson, retired neurosynthetic chemist. Let me tell you what I already know before you tell me something else. Truth between gentlemen, you know.
Yes.
Ronnie slapped another tick fly and swiped his damp hand surreptitiously on his shirt. Hubert grinned, showing a row of very white, very strong teeth.
I wouldn't do that, by the way. It won't come out in the wash. Now, Ronald Vortigern Carruthers and George Starbuck Mahoney arrived yesterday in company of a pretty young girl named Rafaela Forrester Saenz. Right so far?
Yes, but...
You traveled together from the Guerni Republic, specifically from the planet Music. Kept to yourselves, but the girl let it be known that she and you, Mr. Carruthers, were traveling together in blatant disregard of her family's wishes. I hope that was a cover story.
The old man peered at him, blue eyes suddenly frosty. Ronnie felt his ears going hot.
Well, sir, not exactly. That is, we didn't start to... It just happened that we... And anyway, it wasn't like that.
I see. Going to marry the girl, are you?
The blue glare didn't give a millimeter. Ronnie's spine straightened before he realized it.
Of course. We didn't start out together. George and I were on... We had something to do in the Guerni Republic. When Rafa showed up alone...
You decided she needed an escort. Protection?
More or less.
Ronnie was not about to explain to this old fellow that the protection had gone the other way. The bright blue eyes blinked, then Hubert grinned.
Well, well, young blood still runs hot, I see. In that case, young man, you've made a serious mistake.
What?
Letting her go unchaperoned, here of all places.
Ronnie looked around, but saw no particular menace. Besides, Rafa was safely inside.
You should have registered with her. The people at the hotel think she's alone.
That had been the idea. Ronnie fumbled for an explanation and came up with partial truth.
The fact is, sir, that hotel, it's the only one fit for her, but I couldn't quite...
Ah, funds low, eh? What is it, boy? Gambling or chemicals? Give it up, boy. Girl like that is worth it.
It's not that. It's family.
Ronnie felt that his ears must be glowing now. He didn't want to drag Aunt Cecilia into this, and anyway, it wouldn't make sense to anyone outside.
It's his aunt. His aunt suing his parents. And that's why Rafa's parents wanted to drop him. Because his aunt's in the mood to put his parents in the poorhouse and Ronnie along with them.
Never mind, George. It's not quite right anyway. Aunt Cecilia isn't vindictive, not really.
Cecilia...
Cecilia de Marctos.
Helpful. That was George. Ronnie wanted to smack him.
Rides horses. Red hair.
Hubert looked Ronnie up and down again.
Ah, that's Cecilia.
You know her?
Never met her. Never heard of her. Now I know. You have a problem, boy. Your young lady may be in serious trouble.
What? Why do you think that?
Because Patchcock, in general, and Tuville in particular, are not that friendly to strangers. Especially strangers with a mission. And no one is going to believe you sneaked off to Patchcock to enjoy the beautiful scenery together.
I've got to get back.
Ronnie turned and took a long stride without looking. This time it was his boot that smashed into a stingtail mound.
Look out!
Ronnie jumped back from the angry, writhing swarm of stingtails that poured out of the hole. Hubert grabbed his arm.
Not so fast. Here, this way. Walk through these.
He led Ronnie a few meters farther from the shore onto matted, rust-brown vegetation that released a sharp, garlicky scent.
Now settle down. Getting yourself eaten up by stingtails isn't going to help your young lady.
George looked back at the mound, now covered with stingtails.
Eaten up?
Of course. Didn't Marshall tell you? They swarm on you and start stinging. Somewhere between 50 and 100 stings paralyzes the average human. Unfortunately, it doesn't numb the rest of the stings. We lost quite a few settlers at first. People who thought stingtails were no worse than ordinary ants. Luckily, they can't follow a scent across stink foil.
And you didn't tell me. You had me hopping down the shore like an idiot.
It worked. Got your attention, too. Now, enough flabbery-dabbery. Your young lady.
She was taking a tour today. Her Aunt Marta, you see, sent her here.
The old man's expression so clearly said, pull the other one, it's got bells on, that he didn't have to open his mouth.
I know she was taking a tour. The operative question is, did she come back?
Ronnie felt a sinking inside. He could easily imagine his heart having turned to iron, slowly plunging through his guts to the center of the planet.
We're supposed to meet tonight. At some place called Black Andy's for dinner.
Oh, dear. Black Andy's, is it? Not wise. Not wise at all. Let me tell you what to do. You go back to your digs, get cleaned up. Go by her hotel and see if she's back. If she is, stay with her. Eat there, and you'll hear from me tomorrow. If she's not, give me a call.
Hubert fished out an immaculate business card and handed it over with a flourish.
And do be careful on the way back. No more sting tails.
Can't we just walk on the stink foil?
Not advisable. It's a bit corrosive, if you'll look at your boot soles.
George lifted a foot and winced at the lines etched in the sole.
It would probably eat through before you reach town. If you're careful along the shore, you shouldn't have too much trouble. I can't go with you. Wouldn't be advisable at all, you see.
Ronnie didn't see exactly, but he was ready to run the whole distance back to their lodgings. If only it would help Rafa.
Thank you, sir. We'll be in touch.
By the time they got back to their lodgings, they were both hot, sweaty, and reeking of stink foil. The one-armed man at the desk glared at them.
Tourists! Didn't have no more sense to go dancing on the stink foil. You'll smell up the whole place. Might as well throw the boots away. You'll never get that smell out.
But
we don't like that stink in here.
Two large, beefy individuals had come out of the door to the right, and another from the door to the left.
We don't really like your stink in here.
Hang your hands off me!
A half hour later, Ronnie and George limped barefoot back to their room, where someone had been kind enough to ransack their luggage and sprinkle it with cloying perfume.
I don't think they're friendly.
Their assailants had done no real damage beyond bundling them into a smelly blanket, wrapping it with sticky repair tape, and then manhandling them downstairs into a storage closet. It had been locked once they worked their way out of the blanket and tape, but it was a flimsy lock.
I wish I knew if Rafa's come back.
The room's comm unit would be no help. He could see the severed cable from here. George pawed through piles of clothes on the floor.
We'll have to go find out. I hope they left us some shoes.
They had left shoes, filled with something that looked and smelled like rancid cottage cheese.
Not friendly at all.
Ronnie forgot all about Rafa for a moment. He remembered that tone and the smile that went with it.
George!
No. These were my best pair of Millington Crans split lizard custom dyed... Oh, how petty of them. Truly, truly petty.
George, you aren't...
I have some sense. Priorities, Ronnie. Great minds always keep their priorities straight. First things first and all that.
Ronnie hoped to encourage that trend, providing they could agree on the priorities.
Yes?
Rafa first. As a gentleman, I fully agree that her safety must come first.
Good. Then suppose we clean up and...
How do you suggest we clean up? Are you planning to go down that hall and into those showers, assuming that ordinary decency prevails and you will come back clean and all at peace with the world? While nothing happens to your belongings here.
Ronnie had thought, in the brief intervals available while struggling with three very strong men, with the blanket and tape, with the locked door, that a nice hot shower would be next on his list, followed by clean clothes, followed by Rafa. He realized now that George had a point. Someone, if not the same men, might be lurking in the halls or in the showers. The clothes on the floor weren't clean anymore.
Well, I guess I thought we could be ready.
George shook out a cream silk shirt and sniffed it.
No. No, we'll simply have to wear these things, producing an olfactory melange that should certainly confuse any stingtails we meet, and hope that Rafa doesn't pretend she never saw us before.
Glumly, Ronnie agreed. He found a green knit shirt slightly less fragrant than the rest, poured the malodorous slimy goo out of his own brown shoes, and watched as George put the gritty, stained towels to use, wiping out his.
I think they may be salvageable. Good shoes are tougher than they thought. Here.
George tossed the remaining dry towel to Ronnie.
Have fun, boys.
School boys. That's what it is, really. They didn't steal anything. They didn't take our money or papers. Taking revenge on good clothes just because we have them. Like those ticks in the fourth floor end dormitory.
We did put cake batter in their things first, George.
Not in their good things. In their sports clothes. I have never in my life desecrated a pair of Millington Crans shoes, and I cannot imagine sinking so low.
George stalked on through the hot dusk that ended a Patchcock day. Ronnie, aware of an unpleasant dampness between his toes, followed him gingerly. The hotel's doorman looked them up and down, sniffing ostentatiously. George stared straight ahead.
Rafaela Forrester Sain's room, please.
The doorman pointed to the public comm unit in the upper lobby.
What a hole.
Yes. Just a moment.
Ronnie called the desk, who transferred his call to Rafa's room. Ronnie was sure she had been kidnapped by vicious thugs who would stake her out over a stingtail nest.
Hello?
Rafa, it's Ronnie.
Oh, I was in the shower.
Ronnie's mind drifted into a fantasy of Rafa in the shower, of himself in the shower, of both of them.
Ronnie?
Yes, sorry. We had a few problems, and I was wondering, could we come down?
Here? I mean, why? We weren't going to be seen together.
It's too late, Rafa.
He took a deep breath and told her about Hubert and the men at the transient barracks as fast as he could.
And we need to use a shower and get some clean clothes.
I suppose, or wait, I'll come up. If you're that raggedy, they might not let you come down.
Ronnie and George leaned their elbows on the railing of the open shaft, watching the waterfall and ignoring the disapproving glare of the doorman that periodically scorched their backs. Rafa was safe. That's what mattered. Rafa emerged from the lift, looking clean, cool, and confident. She handed them each a plastic strip.
Here, you can't go back there. Not to stay anyway, so I went ahead and got rooms for you here. I'd be delighted to have you in mine, but there's not enough space. I've got things spread all over.
Angelic, Raffaele. Are you sure it's Ronnie you want to marry?
Absolutely. Don't worry. I don't mind about the smell.
Rafa led them to the lift, smiling brilliantly at the doorman, whose dour expression finally shifted. He shrugged, hands out, and gave the boys a friendly nod.
You're on 10, adjoining singles. I thought you might prefer that in case...
In case of what, she didn't say. It meant two showers, anyway. And in this hotel, modern clothes freshers. By the time Ronnie had showered, his clothes held no trace of the flowery perfume. His shoes still reeked faintly, but at least they were completely dry. Dinner in the hotel's dining room completed his cure, he thought. Rafa, in the cherry-colored backless dress with the full sleeves, the waterfall cascading behind her, good food. He could live with that. He was not sure he could live with George, who was giving his own version of their day.
All right, George, I understand. You had a horrible day and found out nothing useful except that there's a retired neurosynthetic chemist who wants to meet us. Let me tell you about mine.
Rafa described a tour of a pharmaceutical plant, a vast production line where gleaming robots ground and mixed chemicals, where the resulting paste, forced into molds, popped out as pills, to be coated with colored liquid that dried hard and shiny. Thence through pill counters, into boxes, past inspectors. It made Ronnie's feet ache to think of it.
But the funniest thing, when I said Aunt Marta was interested in investing here because someone had died in the Moorline family, he turned absolutely white.
Who?
My guide, and hustled me back to the corporate offices. You'd think I'd just insulted the CEO or something. I just made it up, really. Someone's always dying in big families.
Otala. It's Otala who died.
The shock hit Ronnie with the same unpleasant thump of reality as the bully's fists. That made sense of a lot of things. The disadvantage of a good hotel is that there is no way for guests to sneak out unobserved. Someone is always on duty by the public exits. And Twoville offered no nightlife of the sort to attract three wealthy young tourists. Not after that afternoon. Rafa had suggested a walk along the shore, but Ronnie explained about stingtails and tick flies. They ended up in Rafa's suite by default. She had a sitting room.
But if Otala was killed here, If she was in one of the factories...
We're not here to solve Otala's murder.
George paced around the room, peering at everything, before settling into a chair.
Dear heavens, what an ugly lamp. We're here to find out about rejuvenation drugs.
Aren't you forgetting about Otala's Aunt Venezia? She would want us to find out about Otala's murder.
Not if it included getting killed. Even if it did, I personally don't want to get killed finding out. I want to go back to civilization, which this isn't, and let Patchcock stew in its own mess.
It can't all be the same villains. The Morlines making Otala's aunt do those hideous pots so that she won't have time to interfere with the business is one thing. But they wouldn't have killed Otala. Whoever killed Otala had another reason.
They hated her because she was rich.
It had to be more than that. We're all rich and no one's killed us yet.
Not for want of trying. Look at the past few years. We all got shot at on Cerealis. Someone shot Sarah, thinking she was Brune. Ronnie and I were kidnapped by the clones.
That wasn't because we were rich. It was because we knew something someone didn't want us to know. They thought we were dangerous.
So you think Otala knew something she wasn't supposed to know? And if we can find out...
What if she found out her family were making rejuvenation drugs illegally? Would they kill her then?
What if she found out someone was adulterating the drugs? Maybe not her family, maybe someone else.
But why? What could anyone gain by adulterating rejuvenation drugs?
Well, if people don't like the whole process, if they think it's wrong, then they might do something to make it not work, or something.
Ronnie had no idea how that might be done.
If I were an ordinary person, I would resent rejuvenation. There are all these rich people who are going to live forever, and then there's me, the ordinary person, making pills, say, who's never going to get anywhere. It used to be that even rich people died, sometimes inconveniently, and fortunes shifted around. There were opportunities, but now...
Even rich people could resent it. Take my father. He's rejuved only once, but he will again, I'm sure. They want me to be grown up and responsible, but not enough to challenge him. I could be 80 or 90 myself before I have a chance to run a business even older.
And we're always making snide remarks about free birthers. But if people died off soon enough, there wouldn't be any worry about overpopulation, not even on ships.
George nodded, as if he'd said something profound. Then his gaze sharpened.
Free birthers.
What?
Logical group to oppose rejuvenation technology. Rafa. Where's the workforce from, originally?
They're Finvardians, mostly. Why?
George sat up abruptly and reached for the comm unit.
Let me check the database. I'll bet you they're free birthers. And now they're having to make rejuvenation drugs and... Drat. We need a better database.
You need to mind your own business.
That was the leader of four men in hotel livery who appeared in the doorway to Rafa's bedroom. Another disadvantage of a good hotel is that anyone in the right uniform can go anywhere without being noticed. All were tall, pale-skinned, and blue-eyed.
However, since you didn't, I'm afraid you're going to have an unfortunate accident.
He had a weapon. Ronnie stared at the black bore of it with the sick certainty that he was going to die. George had paused with his hand poised over the comm unit keypad. Rafa simply sat there, looking like Rafa.
It won't work. Someone will investigate.
A major industrial accident? Of course they will. But not your deaths individually. The failure of a field generator explains so much.
Now Rafa moved, a convulsive twitch and a frantic glance at the pea suit hanging from its hook behind the door.
Not a chance, rich girl. You and your gallant lovers will all die together. Just like in a story tape.
You killed Otala?
With great pleasure. Would you like to know how?
Not really. I'm sure it wasn't a failure of the field generator.
I think you should know.
Ronnie prayed to unnamed gods for a miracle. Rafa should not have to die hearing horrors.
You're not Finvardian.
Everyone's attention shifted to George. He was looking at the comm unit screen.
Finvardians, dolicephalic, males generally between 1.8 and 2 meters in height, skin color index M1X1, eye color index blue-gray. Religious objections to contraception, plastic surgery for other than reconstruction after trauma. But you've had plastic surgery, and you're wearing contact lenses.
Now that George had said it, Ronnie could see that the leader's eyes were a different blue, darker, intense.
Nonsense! Not all of any human stock have blue eyes. They're recessive.
But two of his followers looked at him with obvious suspicion.
The reference says, alone of human stocks, the severely inbred Finvardians have eliminated dark eyes. The light blue or grey eye colour has been stable for 70 generations, with the usual medical sequelae. Finvardians, therefore, prefer to work and live underground, away from ultraviolet radiation that hastens blindness. Your eyes are dark. Your coloured lenses make them dark blue, not Finvardian blue. Furthermore, a Finvardian should know that all Finvardians have light blue eyes.
Is this true, Sikar?
You are one of us, aren't you?
All three were looking at him now. Light blue eyes narrowed, lips tight. The leader's forehead gleamed in the light.
Of course I'm one of you!
He flushed. There was a short, uncomfortable silence. Ronnie wondered which deity he now owed for that miracle, if it was a miracle. The man to the leader's right glanced around the leader to one of the others. The man on the left nodded, his hand slipping into a pocket of his uniform.
No. Take care of them first. Then we'll talk.
Talk is talk.
The man on his right flung himself on the leader, who shot him. Rafa rolled over the back of the couch, out of sight of the struggle. The struggling figure staggered across the room. Ronnie dodged the row, found Rafa behind the couch, and began to crawl cautiously toward the outer door. Maybe they would forget.
Stop!
Ronnie stopped. Someone, perhaps that someone, had a weapon.
No, you don't.
Ronnie looked up just in time to see the entire comm unit, screen and all, hurtling toward the man with the gun. Water gushed from the ceiling, where something had hit a sprinkler control. Ronnie leapt up just in time to catch a blow to his head, but he was already in motion, and his head connected with someone's stomach. That person slid down. Ronnie stepped firmly where it would do the most good and fended off another man's assault with a bit of unarmed combat he'd learned in the Royals. George, he saw, was doing his best to bludgeon one of the attackers with the desk the comm unit had been on. Rafa took care of the last one with the lamp off the end table.
I didn't think a little more mess would matter, and it was an ugly lamp.
And then she was in Ronnie's arms, sobbing silently. He picked her up and carried her into the hall before she could cut her bare feet on the broken glass. George limped out into the hall, water dripping from his hair.
He really isn't a Finvardian. I have his lenses. Look.
There on his palm were two contact lenses, bright blue.
Is he dead? What about the weapon?
He's dead. One of the others stabbed him. I think it was a ceremonial Finvardian gelding knife. His weapon's right here.
George pulled it from his trousers pocket.
Hold it right there!
From the end of the hall, two men in uniform pointed guns at them.
Drop that weapon! Get on the floor! Move!
But they did it!
Drop that gun now!
George dropped the gun, shrugging at Ronnie.
Get on the floor! Face down! Now!
You don't understand. There are spies or something in our room, in Rafa's room. They attacked us. They did something to the field generator and...
Get down now!
Rafa slipped out of his arms.
We might as well. They aren't going to listen until we do.
In the event, they didn't listen at all. Two dead men in hotel uniforms, and two unconscious men in hotel uniforms, and the guests involved were rich young tourists from the inner worlds. The policeman leaned over Ronnie.
How much did you offer them to have sex with you?
The tall, dark woman striding through Patchcock Station's concourse toward them in a halo of swirling reds and purples reminded Harris of someone. She couldn't think who.
Cecilia, so glad to see you.
Marta, it's been years.
Cecilia turned to Harris.
Rafaela's aunt, Marta Sainz. So, they called you too?
Not exactly. Rafa sent me a message saying she was going to Patchcock with Ronnie and George to follow up a mission for Bunny. I landed on Bunny because, as far as I'm concerned, he had no business risking Rafa on any harebrained missions. And frankly, my dear, he was already scared out of his wits because of Atala. You did know about Atala?
Yes.
And so I said I'd come here, but I wanted help. And he said he'd get your Captain Serrano, whom I presume is you.
Marta turned to Harris.
Yes.
Rafa's Aunt Marta was clearly someone of importance. If she could pressure Lord Thornbuckle to ask favors of her Aunt Admiral. But did she use a title?
I just got off the commercial flight a few hours ago and saw that your yacht was listed as incoming, so I waited. I haven't tried to call yet. I thought I'd see what Captain Serrano advised.
Her glance at Harris combined deference and command.
No harm in calling, I wouldn't think.
I'll do it.
They followed Marta to a row of comm booths and waited while she made her call. Harris wondered again if she should have brought along some of her crew, and reminded herself again that she and Cecilia had booked the last two seats on the next down shuttle. When Marta opened the door of the booth, her face had a dangerous expression that erased all musings from Harris's mind.
You won't believe this. They're under arrest.
What?
For murder and attempted sexual assault.
Ronnie? George? Rafa?
According to the hotel security chief, they tried to get four hotel employees to engage in, and I quote, unnatural and lascivious acts against their will. Then tried to beat them into submission and then shot two of them. George apparently had the gun.
George is Kevil Mahoney's son. If he had shot someone, he wouldn't be caught holding the weapon.
We'll see about this. They're not holding my niece.
Or my nephew.
Or George.
If George had had an aunt, she would have said it. The waiting lounge for the down shuttle was decorated with the ugliest ceramics Harris had ever seen. It filled slowly, though it didn't seem to hold a full shuttle load. Perhaps they had small shuttles here, or perhaps there was a heavy cargo load. Cecilia and Marta paced back and forth. Harris sat and watched them. The time for scheduled departure came and went. People began to grumble. Grumbles mounted as time passed.
Oh, we always have to wait if they're coming. It's got to be family. It's always family.
Harris kept an eye out along the corridor and soon spotted the likeliest candidate, a short, bunchy, gray-haired woman swathed in layers of uneven soft colors. Behind her, a harried-looking man trundled a dolly loaded with boxes and soft luggage. Sure enough, when she entered the lounge, the signal light came on for boarding. Harris picked up her own duffel and caught Cecilia's eye. But Cecilia and Marta were staring at the newcomer. They pounced before she could move past the others in the lane cleared for her by flight attendants.
Venezia!
She turned, her wrinkled face lighting up.
Cecilia! Marta, how lovely to see you! I didn't know you were coming.
Why did you...
Let's get aboard first.
Harris grabbed Cecilia's elbow and pushed. Cecilia let herself be guided into the clear lane behind Venezia. Marta closed in behind Harris. The shuttle was full only because Venezia had reserved an entire section. Cecilia and Marta followed her into it as by right, settled into the wide, padded seats. Harris noticed that the attendants didn't challenge them.
Venezia, my nephew is down there on your planet being accused of murder that he didn't do.
And my niece locked up in your filthy police station.
What do you know about this?
Yes, what?
Venezia shivered as if she were a leaf dancing in storm winds.
I don't know anything. I just got here from Gwenny. When I asked Rafa to come here and investigate, I had no idea.
You asked her?
It seemed nobody would tell me anything about Otala. And I thought maybe she'd done something foolish, like a girl might do. And Rafa being young, maybe she'd figured it out.
You sent her into danger, my niece.
And my nephew. I didn't know it was dangerous. I thought Otala had just run away. Perhaps fallen in love with an unsuitable young man the way Rafaela did.
Ronnie is not unsuitable.
Rafa did not run away. And I still want to know what happened to Otala.
Marta and Cecilia looked at each other, then at Harris, then at Venezia.
You know, don't you?
Not for sure. But what is known is that she infiltrated a workers' organization after having skin sculpting to match her appearance to the Finvardian workers on Patchcock. Then she disappeared. If she were discovered...
Then she's dead!
And the same people could have killed Rafa. And the others? Only now they're in jail for crimes they certainly did not commit. And it wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for you.
The rest of the trip to the surface passed in very uncomfortable silence. The three older women charged off the shuttle like a commando team, every action coordinated for maximum efficiency. Venezia made the three necessary calls to the police, the hotel, and the local corporate headquarters. Marta arranged ground transportation. Cecilia gathered everyone's luggage and dealt with local customs. Harris wondered how they'd worked that out when they hadn't said a word after that first confrontation. She was supposed to be the military expert, but she felt like a young ensign on a first live-fire maneuver. The ground car driver, after a look at Venezia's ID, drove as if they not only owned the road, but had proprietary rights to a sizable volume of space above and on either side of it. The three older women stared forward in grim silence. Harris, after looking out the window to see two battered trucks diving for the nearest ditch, looked at the back of the driver's neck. When they arrived in the scruffy little town and pulled up at the police station, Venezia led the group inside. Now they were lined up in front of a long gray desk.
I want to see my nephew.
I want to see my niece.
I want to see whoever's in charge.
The uniformed officer behind the desk blinked. The mirage didn't go away. Three angry women, three old angry women, the young-looking one wore a rejuvenant ring, loomed over him like harpies on a cliff. Behind them was a younger but no less formidable woman who had the unmistakable carriage of a military officer.
And your name, ma'am?
I am Lady Cecilia Demarctos, and my nephew is Ronald Vortigern Carruthers.
Cecilia leaned over as he reached for one of the pencils in a particularly gruesome pottery jar that leaned drunkenly to one side. He began to write out the names laboriously in longhand.
Use your computer, idiot, and hurry up!
What's the problem out here? Let's not have any rowdy behavior, ladies, please!
That was the captain, unshaven after a night of interrogating the most infuriating prisoners he'd seen in years. Then he blinked at Venezia.
Oh, sorry, Madam Glendower Morline. We weren't expecting you.
You should have been. I sent a message from the orbital station and the shuttle port.
The first policeman waved his hand at a desk littered with scraps of paper.
It's here somewhere, sir. The computer's down again.
Your relatives murdered two hotel employees and beat up two others. They discharged firearms in a public hostelry. They destroyed hotel property. They falsified records.
They did not!
And they're being held without bail pending charges, which will be filed as soon as we have all the data.
I found Madam's message, sir.
Forget that! She's here now. Look, as a special favor, I'll let you speak to your relatives one at a time in the interview room with an officer present. But that's all.
A disgruntled silence fell. Finally, Cecilia and Marta nodded.